This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Saltro Fungicide Seed Treatment from Syngenta for consistently superior sudden death syndrome protection without the stress.
You know, we just kind of strolled into the close and posted the highest settlement in more than 6 months while corn and soybean futures positioned ahead of tomorrow's reports from USDA. We've got one more show to get you ready for those reports, and we've got just the guy to do it, too.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it is report prep with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist, INTLFC Stone. And right after the news, Oliver Slope joins from Blue Line Futures. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis Michelson, thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Hello, yes.
Yes, and thank you for tuning in this afternoon. Really appreciate it. It's been quite a day on AgriTalk, and we've covered a lot of ground. We've got the Dow up about 200 points again.
Okay.
The last time I looked, crude oil has come back and is trading steady to higher right now.
Okay.
So a little bit of movement there. Maybe they've decided, okay, enough is enough, and we need to move on from what is going on with Iran. And that comes at a time shortly after we do get word that the Pentagon believes that the Ukrainian jet that crashed shortly after takeoff from the airport in Tehran was shot down by a missile.
Okay. Okay.
Or two. Yeah, or two missiles.
All right.
Crazy stuff. We talked about it with retired Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North this morning.
Yes, we did.
On the on AgriTalk. And we did the portion of the conversation that we had with Colonel North that we ran on the show this morning did not include the part the conversation about the Ukrainian jetliner. Now, the full interview is available at agritalk.com. It's also available on the AgriTalk app.
That's right.
So get out
also
there,
on
check
ProFarmer.
It out.
ProFarmer.com. We've got it on ProFarmer.com too for you members out there.
Very good. Very good. So the full interview, including what turned out to be Colonel North's very astute observations about that jetliner, are available in the full interview. So,
yeah. His are probably observations that you can trust, too. I mean, he's been through enough intrigue and especially been through rough spots with Iran for the last couple decades. How lucky were we to get him on the show? We appreciate it so much.
4 decades. Think of it.
Yeah.
So, we tapped into as much of that experience, the experiences that he has had as we could. So it was very interesting. It was a fascinating conversation with Colonel North this morning. Okay, let's get into the news.
Well, Chip, March SRW wheat futures tested resistance just under 565 early in the session, backed off to trade below 560 for most of the afternoon. Then the contract pushed higher into the final bell to close above 560 for the first time, get this, since June 27th. Chart watchers say this opens upside potential to the June high of 573.5. Strength in wheat futures is due in part to the index roll, as long-only funds allocate more funds to the long side of HRW wheat. In tomorrow's supply and demand report, traders expect very little change in the wheat balance sheet. And winter wheat seedings, traders anticipate seedings of 30.664 million acres. Chip, that's down nearly 500,000 acres from last year. March hard red futures 10.25 cents higher, 490.25, baby. March soft red futures jumped 9.5 cents to close at 562.25. March spring wheat up 4.25, 552 even. Chip.
Yeah, we talked about that index roll yesterday on the show with Steve Freed from ADMIS. It makes a lot of sense what we talked about yesterday.
Traders on average expect harvested corn acreage to be cut 465,000 acres, and for the national average corn yield to be cut 0.8 of a bushel from November. The concern is the smaller supply could be offset by cuts to demand to hold expected 2019-20 corn carryover near 1.9 billion bushels. Corn prices pushed higher in the overnight session with support from reports that South Korea bought U.S. corn. But positioning for the reports backed prices off into the close. March corn futures were a penny lower, 383 and a quarter. July corn down a penny, 396 and three quarters. Dease 2020 corn, $4. Back down three quarters of a cent after firming three quarters yesterday, Chip.
Yeah, but $4 has got a grip on the December 2020 corn contract.
It's evidently.
Yeah, I don't see it. Well, unless the longer-term fundamentals change with tomorrow morning's reports, I just don't see $4 losing its grip on Dease 20 corn.
Mm-hmm. Well, USDA's World Board will not include likely outcomes of a Phase 1 trade agreement with China in tomorrow's supply and demand report for soybeans. Still, traders expect a smaller 2019 bean crop estimate from November and little change in demand estimates to drop carryover by about 50 million bushels from last month.
That's a lot.
Bean futures traded higher in the overnight session on general optimism and some isolated dry conditions in southern Brazil and Argentina, but prices slipped into the close on position evening. March bean futures were 3¾ cents lower, 943 and a half. July beans off 4 cents, 968 and a quarter. November 2020 beans closed at 971 and a half. Chip, that's down 4 cents today.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I didn't check was if there was any change in the weather outlook for Brazil and Argentina. With the way that that market traded into the close, there might be a little bit of rain slipping in there.
Okay, fair enough. Well, on the livestock side, quickly, Feb cattle futures 37.5 higher, 126.72.5. April cattle futures up 25, 127.30. March feeders up 2.5 cents, 146.55. And on the snout side, February hogs were $2 lower, 67.02.5. April 127.5 lower, 74.47.5. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Oliver, this move in the wheat market, man, it looks real.
Well, first of all, two Olivers in one day? Wow, you're a lucky guy. You're a lucky guy.
Yeah. That is the first, I'm sure.
Now, wheat has been resilient, I mean, really, since we made those contract lows back in September, just higher highs, higher lows, just continuing to march higher. Maybe there's a little bit more juice in the grape in that Chicago contract, 573 to 575 was that double top back in June. Probably be overbought if we make a run up there here over the next week or so. So I'm not sure there's a whole lot of value left in that here in the very near term. Despite the chart being really constructive, I think the value still remains in that Kansas City contract. And if we were to get a friendly report and some friendly money flow here over the course of the next 24 hours, potentially that takes us out above $5. And then I think that's really when you start to see the funds maybe get a little bit more aggressive on that Kansas City side.
Gotcha. $4 has got a grip on Dease 20 corn futures, like 126 has got a grip on February live cattle futures, Oliver.
Yeah, I know. So something's got to give here soon. Hopefully, we can see some upward momentum in corn. Really hope we can get a friendly report. And there's still some work to do. Last Thursday when I was on the show, I was pretty optimistic. And then risk happened, and we got that headline risk, and it was a risk-off mentality on Friday, and that kind of threw a wrench in things. But here we are, 377 to 380, I think, is a must-hold pocket that we're looking at going into tomorrow. If we get a close below there, I wouldn't be surprised to see a potential retest of the contract lows near 365 and three quarters. So obviously a lot pending on tomorrow's report. You touched on cattle. For the most part, it's been range-bound over the last 2 months. Got 124, 127. Cash, probably be a little bit more firm this week, so we'll see.
Thanks, Oliver. That's Oliver Slope, Blue Line. We've got Arlen Suderman up next. As 2020 kicks off, soybean growers will be thinking about getting their crop off to the strongest start possible. This means planning ahead to defend their soybeans against yield-robbing pests and early-season stress. Today, we're wrapping up our conversation with Dale Ireland, Syngenta Seed Care Technical Product Lead, about the importance of starting the season strong. Dale, so how does Sultro set growers up for success with its consistent performance?
Saltro really offers the U.S. soybean grower the next level of sudden death syndrome and nematode protection compared to what the competitive market has been offering. We just see more consistency without any phyto or negative plant response early. The plants grow off very robustly, very uniformly. We have more protection against sudden death syndrome than the leading competitive treatment. In fact, in a multi-year data set, we have a statistically significant 3-bushel advantage over the leading competitor in that SDS nematode space. So along with its application benefits, we're really excited about being able to introduce Saltro for the 2020 season.
So Dale, how did Saltro perform in the studies conducted in 2019?
We've had some really nice performances in university tests. The University of Kentucky, we had a very nice test there at Princeton, Kentucky, where we had very nice yield advantage over the yield of the leading competitor in the market space. The same situation was true in Valmyer, Illinois. And then we had the same result up at the University of Minnesota. It's really the next level of SDS protection.
That was Dale Ireland, Technical Product Lead for Syngenta Seed Care. For more information on Saltro and superior SDS protection without the stress, visit SyngentaUS.com/Saltro.
The sounds of success vary from person to person.
Over to second in time on the first double play.
Success sounds like this to a Credenz soybean grower. When you pick Credenz, you get a precise variety that fits your field. A variety built to work in your soil type and conditions with targeted traits for local pest and disease pressures. Earning the satisfaction of a successful soybean crop? That's smart. Talk to your authorized Credenz retailer or local BASF seed advisor. Always read and follow label directions.
5 conferences, 1 location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the 5 highly regarded top producer conferences, Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
Just like the weather, crop insurance keeps changing. And that's why Farm Credit Services of America employs full-time crop insurance officers who understand those changes, deliver the best options to your farm, and the coverage you expect. The weather can be surprising. Your crop insurance shouldn't be. Discover the difference with a no-cost, no-obligation crop insurance plan review from Farm Credit Services of America. Learn more by calling 800-884-FARM.
Mr. Chairman, as a corn root, I speak for millions of my kind who can't be here to defend themselves. Pests are stalking our stocks and undermining our roots. Yes. But we can elect to protect with a legacy of strength. Poncho Votivo 2.0 seed treatment system increases nearby microbial activity to help us grow stronger. That's smart. Ladies and gentlemen, please, this is a corn roots movement. Ask your BASF seed advisor about Poncho Votivo 2.0 seed treatment. Always read and follow label directions.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Welcome back. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. Got Davis Michelson with me as well.
Davis.
And we're going to be talking with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist, INTL FC Stone.
Uh-huh.
Arlen loves to answer questions, you guys. So if you've got a question about any, you know, don't just be thinking about the reports that we're getting tomorrow from USDA. If you've got any questions about what's going on in these grain markets, I'm sure that he would love to answer your questions. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet those questions to us with hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I'll be sure to see it. Mm-hmm. All right, let's bring him in. Arlen Suderman, the Chief Commodities Economist at INTL FC Stone. Arlen, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Good to be back here with you again.
Good, good, good. Yeah, I was just, before the show started, I was kind of throwing it out there at producer Joe Stackler that, hey, be careful what you say to this guy. He was the first ever guest on the afternoon show, which at the time was Market Rally, but now it's just AgriTalk here in the afternoons. And so, believe it or not, we're coming up on 6 years.
Wow, a lot of history behind there, a lot of good shows.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. A lot of excellent guests that we've had on the show in that time. Okay, man, I want everybody to feel really comfortable and feel like they've got a good handle on what to expect going into the reports tomorrow. We're going to start on the supply side of the balance sheet here, Arlen, with the annual production summary. It's not very often that you see the trade expectations for a sizable cut to harvested corn acres and a cut to the yield, because normally if you're taking acres out, you're supporting the yield. But, boy, the trade guess is pretty aggressive.
It is, and some of that's the bias of the year that we had. Now, this was a very unique growing season, as we've talked about before, so you really can't find another year that was identical to this in the type of growing conditions. There are a couple years that I've referenced, though, quite a bit during the growing season because they had some similar characteristics, and that was 1993 and 2009 for different reasons. And in 1993, we saw USDA cut the yield 2.4 bushels between November and the final, and in 2009 we saw it increase the yield 1.8 bushels. So there is a wide range of possibilities here. However, when they did the survey, there was over a billion bushels still in the field. Right. So how accurate was the farmer in trying to estimate what that corn would produce, much of which will still be in the field until the spring thaw? What will harvest losses be? How well did he estimate that? Did he overestimate it? Did he underestimate it? That we don't know.
Yeah. The yield on the first 11 or 12 million billion bushels that was harvested, though, Arlen, it was better than what I thought it was going to be.
Well, certainly so. I would agree with that. And as you know, I'm a former agronomist.
Yeah.
And I just did not think, as an agronomist, I felt like this crop, back in late July, said I thought this crop was 160 plus or minus 3 bushels. Yep. And maybe it'll end up there by September of this year. But by then, the markets won't really care that much, maybe at the 163 level. But I'm at 165.5 going into this report, and we'll see if USDA surprises me again.
Yeah. Okay. Now, that reference to September of next year, obviously, after we get the September 1 quarterly grain stocks as of September 1, there is the opportunity for an adjustment to the bean crop. NAS says that they're going to use it as an opportunity to potentially adjust the corn crop going forward. And the reason that I bring that up, Arlen, is because I think there's some that are thinking USDA did learn their lesson from last year when they overestimated the bean crop by 116 million bushels. They overestimated that corn crop, according to the quarterly grain stocks report, by what, 300 million? Something like that. So I think there may be an attitude that, okay, now that we've got that proof there, they're going to adjust more aggressively because of the long drawn out harvest that we had that was similar to 18.
Oh, I disagree with that based on comments that Lance made to me back in November when I talked to him. He said it just killed him to make that downward adjustment last year's soybean production estimate. He said that the production estimates are the one number they have the greatest amount of confidence in. They had no choice on soybeans because it's basically crush and exports, and that's measured, so they had to reduce it. On corn, it's a different story. Is it that the crop was overstated, or was it that feed usage is higher than what WASDE's currently saying? His thought clearly is feed usage is higher than what WASDE is saying. I asked him, who's this, you know, are you two of you going to get together, WASDE and NASS, and work this out? He goes, no, it's my decision. And so he has to decide. I think WASDE's putting some pressure on NASS to lower last year's crop. I guess last year, we're talking about 2018 now.
2018,
yeah, corn yield estimate. But Lance is confident in their procedures and believes that it was right. And that has implications then for 19 and for 20. Because if it was feed usage and not the size of the crop, then that means that feed usage is a lot bigger in 19 and a lot bigger in 2020. And that's actually where my bias is right now.
Okay. Well, then if the 2018-19 feed number, what is it, 5.6? Jeez,
yeah,
I'm kind of lost on it right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so 5.6 billion bushels. You compare that to the years leading up to it, Arlen, that would suggest to me that they've been shy on those numbers as well, and we really have no idea how much corn's out there.
Yeah, exactly right. And you look at the basis now, and I know farmers saying, yeah, the basis is strong, the crop's not there. There's other factors at play there as well to make that basis strong. But I just think WASDE's been underreporting. What I think is going to happen, this is just my gut reaction after talking to Lance, is that he's probably going, that gap from that September stocks report, he'll probably kind of bite his lip and make the adjustment on 40% of it, and the other 60% will have to be feed usage, and then we'll see how WASDE adjusts the feed usage for the 19-20 marketing year as well.
Okay, so we've got all that. Let's go to that 1.91 billion bushel number that we got from USDA at the in the December supply and demand report. That is the carryover projection on corn for the 2019-20 marketing year. You taking the under on that now?
Yeah, I am. And, of course, we estimate final more rather than what USDA will do, basically. But I do think that they end up coming down. And in fact, I'm looking for ending stocks to be closer to $1.631 billion. And that does not have penciled in an increase in corn, ethanol, or DDG exports to China, since we don't know what the details of that agreement are yet.
Right.
So that's very little margin there for unknown demand to China.
That's kind of my tipping point, Arlen, 1.6 billion bushels as it relates to total supplies to get your stocks use ratio. But this year it is about 1.6 billion bushels. That you get below that, and it gets a whole lot easier to anticipate some higher prices.
Basically, we start seeing acceleration in price accelerate when you get below 9% stocks to use ratio. And when you look at the rest of the world using USDA's numbers, the rest of the world minus China, which really isn't that involved in global corn trade, and minus the United States, to see, okay, is the rest of the world going to need U.S. corn or not? The rest of the world's corn to stocks use ratio is right at about a 34-day supply, which is the tightest we've seen in 19 years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, I wonder, did we just hint at the number that you're going to be watching most closely in the reports tomorrow?
I'm going to be watching that corn stocks report, followed by the corn yield, because that corn stocks number is the combination of USDA's ability to estimate the size of the crop, and which is based survey-based, and feed usage, which is simply a calculation. neither of which is measured. And so the stocks is going to tell us a lot about it, and then kind of follow that stocks number through the year. I think that corn stocks number is going to be the most significant number to follow through 2020.
Okay. Well, we're coming up on a break here. I want to come back and talk more about why this might be the most important number, because I think what it suggests. I'm just going to wait and let you explain it when we get to it. We're talking with Arlen Suderman. Arlen is the chief commodities economist for INTLFC Stone. We're going to focus more on the DEIS 1 corn stocks number, which does include some of that unharvested corn that Arlen was talking about. We'll be right back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
When you think of the seasons of agriculture, you naturally think of planting and harvesting. I would also point out there is a learning season. It's coming up. It's just ahead for you producers. And there's an excellent opportunity to learn at the Farm Futures Business Summit. It'll be at the end of January at Coralville, Iowa. The theme this year is 2020 Clear Insights for a Profitable Future. It's the Farm Futures Business Summit, Coralville, Iowa. Go to farmfuturessummit.com for information.
It's time for AgriTalk's Tech Talk. Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught joins us now. Dan, what's the market move that matters the most today?
Hey, Jeff, I'm looking at March cotton futures today. The U.S.-China trade war sent cotton prices falling in mid-2019, with the March 2020 contract falling from around 78 cents per pound to an August low of 57.65. Improving optimism on the trade front helped power the recent comeback. The contract topped pivotal resistance around 69 cents in late December and has continued climbing. In fact, it surged to an 8-month high of 70.69 at today's close. Traders may be expecting another USDA cut to its 2019 U.S. harvest estimate on tomorrow's reports, along with next week's signing of the trade agreement. Of course, surprisingly large numbers on the reports could trigger a reversal, but there's no doubt the cotton market is acting well at the moment.
Okay, good stuff. Give us a better selling opportunity later. Thank you, Dan. That's Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
Five conferences, one location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the five highly regarded top producer conferences: Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and, for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was the burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket, you spot miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Busted.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Davis, sit down.
All right. I was busting a move. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Welcome back. We're talking with Arlen today. Give us a call. It's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us, hashtag AgriTalk, which I got a tweet that we're going to get to here, Lucas, in just a bit. But let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed today.
Sure thing. Well, Chip, March hard red futures were 10 and a quarter cents higher at 490 and a quarter. March soft red futures up 9.5, 562 and a quarter. March corn futures a penny lower, 383 and a quarter. December corn closed at $4 even, back down 0.75 cents. March bean futures were 3.75 cents lower, 943 and a half. Novi beans 971 and a half, down 4 cents today. On the livestock side, February cattle futures 37.5 cents higher at 126.72 and a half. March feeders were up 2.5 cents, 146.55. And February lean hog futures off $2, 67.02 and a half. There's your quick market recap. Back to her, big fella.
All right, thank you so much. Arlen Suderman is the chief commodities economist at INTL FC Stone. He's our guest today. We were talking, Arlen, we were talking about the quarterly grain stocks numbers. Earlier, you mentioned that Lance has got a high level of confidence in his yield estimate and his crop estimate. Statistically speaking, the least reliable set of numbers that we get from USDA NAS is the grain stocks numbers, right?
Yeah, that's where the biggest surprises are, and I have trouble finding any type of trend to make sense of, you know, direction of those surprises as well.
Right. Yet that's what we square the supply and demand balance sheets to after we get the September 1 stocks for corn and for soybeans and other crops as well. But for corn and soybeans in particular, we square it to the September 1 grain stocks report. That's why there needs to be some of those adjustments on the supply side from the previous year. But for this year, the DEIS-1 number, the trade expectations, 11.511 billion bushels, off about 400 million bushels from where we were a year ago on December 1. Arlen, what number have you got plugged in?
11.376. Okay. So that would be about 135 million or so smaller than what the average trade guess is.
Right, right. And the big reason for that is because feed use is stronger in the first quarter of the 2019-20 marketing year than it has been given credit for in the past.
Yeah, now we fed a lot of wheat over the last quarter, much of the wheat. In fact, most of the wheat that gets fed goes through our offices, and we've got the wheat booked all right on through January, February, March, some in April, May. But with the rising wheat prices, we have seen some interest in selling those wheat bushels back and switching back to corn. But also, I think it's important to bring up the biggest surprise in corn stocks that I recall is the June 30th report of 2010 after that wet, low test weight crop in 2009, where all of a sudden we got a corn stocks report that inferred a half billion bushel increase in feed usage because two factors, that wet, low test weight corn shrank in the bin, fewer bushels came out than what went in. And because low test weight corn, by definition, is lower in starch or energy content, so it requires more of it to make ethanol and to make gain on livestock. So you consume more. And those two factors were not really accounted for. And I asked Lance, have you made adjustments to account for that with the amount of low test weight wet corn going in the bin this year? He goes, nope, we'll just continue to do the best that we can. And he does try to do the best he can from a statistical standpoint. And a true statistician doesn't want to vary their procedures. And I respect that, but I think it does leave us vulnerable to some surprise stocks reports again in March and June.
Yeah. We came out of that 2009 crop tour, Arlen, and we were looking at a crop that was just as immature as the corn crop was this year in many cases. I hate making universal or general comments, but it was a very immature crop that year. And then we socked it to it and ended it a little early, and I mean, it was just ugly. And the that 2009 crop was overestimated by enough, my feeling, because of all the factors that you just talked about. It took 2 years to sort that issue out, Arlen.
Right. Yeah.
And the only thing that sorted it out was the drought of 2012, really.
Yeah, exactly right. And as you indicate there, by time we get it sorted out, the market is focused on other factors right down the road.
Right, absolutely. Okay, wheat. Let's see. 1.917 billion bushels is the trade guess for DEIS-1 wheat stocks, off about 90 million bushels from the same time last year. You like that number, or where are you at?
I'm at 1.806 because of the higher feed usage number. Maybe a little bit on the low side there with some of the wheat we've seen switching back here recently, but that's really where I'm at as
okay.
far as my pre-report estimates.
So do you want to pull back some from the 974? Is that the carryover estimate on wheat?
Yeah, I'm at 959 right now in ending
okay.
stocks. So, and USDA was at 974. So, and the feed usage is the big thing right now.
Right, right. Very good. Very good. Before we get to the question off of Twitter, let's go ahead and jump on soybeans. Like with corn, they're anticipating a smaller supply coming in. Where are you at with that, Arlen?
Well, I'm looking for a soybean yield of 46.5 bushels. So that's down about 0.4 of a bushel, a little bit of drop in acreage. And my stocks number is 3.137 below the average trade at 3.186. So that's about 50 million below where the trade's at on stocks.
Okay, so if we take that all the way out to the carryover then, you know, in December, USDA was down at 475 million bushels. It's going to be interesting to see if we can get all the way down to 4.25.
Yeah, it really is. And I've got a higher ending stocks for the year at 521 because I just see exports falling short unless there's something in this phase one deal that we don't know about, because demand has just been hurt too bad.
Okay. Before we start looking forward, are we missing anything from the reports for winter wheat seedings? Real quick, USDA's got us off about 500,000 from last year. Does that sound right?
I pull another 450,000 acres or so off. I'm at 30.2 million acres.
Wow. Okay, now that would be a number that would get the market's attention.
Yeah, and basically we're looking for soft red winter wheat stocks that continue to decline. And for the mills who use U.S. soft red winter wheat around the world, there's really not a substitute for it. There are substitutes for hard red. So that's the biggest concern and why it's at such a premium in price right now. But we're looking for a decrease in acreage in both, and primarily hard red, though.
All right. Well, you gave me a good segue into the acreage question from at Lucas Johnson 329. He says they are talking 96 million acres of corn next year as intentions. Do you think that's realistic?
I'm at 94 million. I was at 92.2 previously, but then when December corn went back up toward that $4 level, mm-hmm. I moved up to 94. And I think some of the credit limitations are going to be a factor, input costs, and some of the tight credit for some producers being able to expand as much as they want. But this is still remaining very fluid, depending on how the December corn reacts to the report and to the trade agreement with China over the next 60 days.
Right. So if you're at 94 million for corn, where are you on soybeans?
And on soybeans, I'm basically looking for the two combined to stay where they've been historically at about 178.7 million acres. So that puts soybeans at 84.7 then.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm not going to argue with those numbers a bit right now. What moves that number as we go through spring? I mean, price, obviously, but if China comes in and does, and phase one is everything that they say it's going to be, Arlen, could we see an effort to move some acres over to beans?
We could, but I think we have more opportunity on the corn side simply because of ASF, African swine fever, hurting hog production around the world. That makes it really tough for soybeans. It could happen, but it'd be a lot tougher. For corn, what I'm really looking for is, yeah, some corn bushels to go there, but there's an opportunity for ethanol and DDGs. Will China do it? That's the big question. But they're subsidizing their industry, their ethanol industry now, we believe over $1 billion, and they are not happy with that substitute from our sources in China, or that subsidy. They don't like it. They've never really bought into it. They could simply pull that subsidy back and open the door and let U.S. ethanol come in there without all the punitive tariffs and DDGs. We know there's interest in buying our DDGs, and that could really help our domestic corn demand and help bump that December corn price, if that happens. It's still a big if when you're talking about China.
Well, and what a shot in the arm for the economy in the Midwest if we would start to move a bunch of ethanol out to out of the country and prop those margins up. My, that really feels like what we need, Harlan.
Yeah, and I think it may take a little bit of time for changes to take place. Greg Dowd, chief ag negotiator, says by the middle of this year, we should see some significant changes in agriculture because of Phase 1, USMCA, and Japan.
Yeah, very good. Arlen, have fun with the reports tomorrow. Thank you so much for making time for us today. And, we'll talk with you again real soon.
Thank you, Chip.
Hey, I'll see you at the end of the month in Chicago, won't I?
You bet. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. At TPS there in Chicago. Thank you, Arlen. We'll talk with you there. Okay, when we come back, Davis and I are going to try to boil down what has been a really kind of cool 2 hours of AgriTalk today. We'll do that next.
Five conferences, one location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the five highly regarded top producer conferences: Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and, for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous 1 month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harrith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket you spot. Miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Commodity Classic is unlike any other event in agriculture because it's created by farmers for farmers. Farmers determine the entire schedule, from the educational sessions to the trade show to the entertainment. Your experience is focused on the questions you have, the challenges you face. You'll walk away with answers, ideas, and a renewed energy about your operation because farmers just like you have made sure you will. See your future clearly at Commodity Classic in San Antonio, February 27th through 29th. Visit CommodityClassic.com.
Are you over 50? Would you like to get up to 33% more income in retirement? Then call now for this free book, Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers, from a leading financial firm on maximizing your income in retirement. That's right, free. This free book reveals little-known truths about annuities in simple-to-understand terms that will help you make the right choices before buying an annuity. And it's free. As a bonus, we'll also throw in a free annuity rate report summarizing the rates and benefits from financially strong insurers.
Call 800-806-9013.
That's right, annuity do's and don'ts for baby boomers and annuity rate report, both absolutely free for calling today.
Call 800-806-9013. That's 800-806-9013.
Producers have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer. Increased income is possible using strategies suited to your goals and may require buying multiple annuities and holding them full term.
Sometimes life is wonderful, and sometimes it's not. Cherish the good, but always be prepared for life's challenges. Private healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call at 800-626-4910. That's 800-626-4910.
The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Welcome back. Yeah, you know, really good conversation with Arlen Suderman from INTLFC Stone there.
Absolutely.
Davis, he's always good.
He is.
I mean, the amount of effort that it takes to wrangle all of those numbers and try to make them make sense. There's no wonder that the supply side is split from the demand side estimates inside of USDA.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get out into Arlen's world, my world, Jeff Wilson's world, the guys at Doan, most of the people that we have on here, everybody's got to try to make those numbers line up on their own.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely not easy to do, and it's easy to get caught with a number that is out of line, a number that is that does look out of place.
Well, sure,
but I tell you, when I'm looking at the trade expectations as they all work together and tangle together,
mm-hmm.
I don't see a number in the trade expectations that I go, wait a second, no, that's out of place. They don't understand the process, or they don't understand, or whatever. Everything looks to me like we're set up for a really dadgum boring set mm-hmm. of January numbers.
Okay.
Which with what is going on in these markets, I guess that's not such a bad thing, is it?
No, I would venture to say it might even be a good thing.
No doubt. Hey, the Dow up 193 points.
All right.
You know, it's still chugging along, so everybody's 409Ks.
how do I really get you on that 409K? Let me get...
One of the best tweets that I saw following up on that one.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not stealing it from you for Tweet of the Days.
Not at all.
But Garrett Toy at Ag Trader Talk. You know which one I'm saying?
I think so. Go ahead.
It was brilliant. If you have to ask what a 409K is, you can't afford it. Spectacular. Good work there, Garrett. My
Garrett gosh. Toy. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, it's Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. I wanted to sneak that in
really?
Somewhere. I don't know how many law enforcement officials we have listening
Hi,
to the
Eric.
Show, but whoever you are, we appreciate you here on AgriTalk.
Good.
And you know, all you other listeners out there, if you violated the law, I'm thinking of, you know, you get pulled over or whatever, little respect for the law enforcement officers, all right?
That's
They're
right.
doing their job. It's sometimes a dangerous job, a frightening job sometimes.
Absolutely.
And a necessary thing for us to have in our society.
Yep.
So thank you, law enforcement officers, and the rest of you, behave yourselves.
Yes. Yeah. Swine nutritionist at Jim Smith, 87.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The good doctor himself.
We're talking
himself.
About that 2009. Yeah, the good professor himself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We were talking about that 2009 crop. He tweeted out during the show there that don't forget that the 2009 crop was full of vomit toxin. Mm-hmm. That skewed how it was fed to livestock. Absolutely. That is correct. That is correct. Especially over in the Eastern Belt. I don't know about the Western Belt so much, but it's only been 10 years ago. I don't know why I can't remember it. I do remember that the vomitoxin issue was huge in that 2009 crop. But mm-hmm. it's seriously the overestimation of that 2009 corn crop created issues that USDA was trying to account for. It, for at least 2 years, and I'm not kidding when I say I think it was the 2012 drought that finally gave them the way that they could say, okay, the crop is small enough now we can take it down there, because that 2010 crop, I believe, if I remember right, it came in much lower than everybody else expected,
mm-hmm.
or than many expected. That was part of the effort in trying to adjust for the overestimation of the 2009 crop. The numbers, it's mm-hmm. not easy. All I know is that the 2009 crop, at one point, it got so bad that when they were putting the grain stocks numbers together, somebody inside of the room told me that they did stop, and somebody, they looked around the room, it was Joe Persaki, looked around the room and said, well, what number is Chip going to scream about the most on this one? Love it.
I can just see you in the olden days with that Flory flat top going, with a head of steam going.
That's right.
Just railing away.
That's
beautiful.
Right.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Real quick, National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook. This is for January 15th. Through the 19th, we've got below normal temperatures continuing to push their way in from the northwest into the middle of the country. We've now got Iowa, northern Illinois, most of Missouri, Kansas in the area that is expecting to see below normal temperatures. South and east of that are looking for normal to above normal temperatures, and we've got above normal precipitation expected over the entire Corn Belt. When they are talking about below normal temperatures in this
one, they
are really below normal here.
Oh, really?
It looks like we're getting into a serious cold snap up in the Dakotas, Minnesota, northern Nebraska, parts of Iowa in the next 6 to 10 days. All
okay.
right. Tweet of the day.
Today's tweets are brought to you by Food Frenzy. No matter what the weather, one thing we all have in common is needing food for all sorts of purposes. Now today's tweets at Corn Firmer. Give blood, get Oreos. Fair trade.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. At our own J.S. Reinecker. I'm not good at a lot, but I am absolutely elite at spilling hot beverages onto other people. And finally, at Weed Girl 24, if the forecasts are true, I probably need to go buy salt tomorrow. Chip, I checked the forecast for Weed Girl's area. It does appear to include unsalted pretzels, so better get some salt.
Load up.
Mm-hmm.
All right, for Davis and for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening today. Thanks also to Oliver Slope and Arlen Suderman for joining us tomorrow morning. It's a free-for-all, and tomorrow afternoon, Davis and I are going to have all the details of the USDA reports for you right here on AgriTalk.
Just like the weather, crop insurance keeps changing. And that's why Farm Credit Services of America employs full-time crop insurance officers who understand those changes, deliver the best options to your farm, and the coverage you expect. The weather can be surprising. Your crop insurance shouldn't be. Discover the difference with a no-cost, no-obligation crop insurance plan review from Farm Credit Services of America. Learn more by calling 800-884-FARM.
Commodity Classic is the place to renew your passion for agriculture.
This is my third time at the Commodity Classic. It is just such an exciting place. If you're in agriculture and you come down here and you don't get excited, you shouldn't be in agriculture. Every year I come home, I take something away. And every year I come home and I'm excited. I can't wait for spring to get here now.
See your future clearly at Commodity Classic in San Antonio, Texas, February 27th through 29th. Discover more at commodityclassic.com.
Thanks to Syngenta, producers of Saltro fungicide seed treatment, for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer today about reserving your supply for 2020. Always read and follow label instructions.